Welcome to The Book Report. I'm your host, Elaine Charles, with a show that aspires to offer some relief to all of my listeners slogging through the drudgery, the papers, and the endless forms of tax time. Today, we offer up lighthearted fare, comedy, with my hope that literary fun and frippery will be a welcome counterpoint to the dreaded April 15th. Our guests today are also a very special treat. So take heart, tax preparers, and take a listen as we turn to page one of the book report.
Traditional advertising can be expensive and wasteful. But lately, you've been hearing a lot about social media and viral marketing. But let's be honest, it's confusing. That's why you need Magic Buzz, a new marketing company so unique, we've even coined a special phrase for what we do. Socio-viral. We combine the word-of-mouth friendliness of social media, like Facebook, Twitter, together with the viral reach power of YouTube, to create the socio-viral effect. The Magic Buzz team makes sure our clients are well-represented online. We recently took word-of-mouth advertising to the number one position as most productive medium for a major cell phone company. That's right. Magic Buzz produced more sales than an expensive TV campaign at a fraction of the cost. Put the power of socio-viral marketing to work for you. Visit us at magicbuzz.com. M-A-G-I-C-B-U-Z.com. If you have any questions, please feel free to email us at info@magicbuzz.com. Magic Buzz, we're there when you can't be.
Copy states, if you don't buy this book, you're a racist. So, do we have your attention? Baratunde Thurston was raised by a pro-black, pan-African single mother during the crack years of the 1980s in Washington, D.C. He was educated at Sidwell Friends and Harvard University. Thurston co-founded the black political blog Jack and Jill Politics and serves as director of digital for The Onion. He's written for, among others, Vanity Fair and the UK Independent. According to his bio, he appears on cable news regularly to say smart things in funny ways. He resides in Brooklyn, lives on Twitter, and has over 30 years' experience being black. His first book, How to Be Black, is actually beyond a memoir. It's a guidebook offering practical advice on everything from how to be a black friend, to how to be the next black president, to how to celebrate Black History Month. To provide additional perspective, Baratunde assembled an award-winning black panel and asked them revealing questions such as, when did you first realize you were black? How black are you? And can you swim? The result is a humorous, intelligent, and audacious guide. The author narrates with honest storytelling and biting wit.
Since the establishment of Black History Month, other groups have been similarly honored. March is shared between women and Irish Americans, and May among Jews, Asian Pacific Islanders, and older Americans. Yeah, old people get one-third of a month. June has been reserved for honoring gay and lesbian pride, along with Caribbean American heritage, explaining June's better-known name as Best Parades Ever Month. Given the rapid demographic changes facing America, you would expect a Latino History Month by now, but National Hispanic Heritage Month covers September 15 to October 15. While it is a four-week period of time, it's technically not a month and forces those honoring the nation's Latinos to buy two calendars. November is National American Indian Heritage Month, in which Americans are encouraged to recognize the contribution of Native peoples to our great nation by eating turkey and enjoying the bounty of the stolen lands beneath our feet. For school children, the Black History Month ritual is simple and automatic. Make posters out of construction paper, attend the obligatory assembly, and learn one Negro spiritual, exactly one, probably wade in the water. It's also possible that you will sing the Black National Anthem, Lift Every Voice and Sing. The options for adults, however, extend far beyond this narrow set of pre-programmed activities. In order to simplify your celebratory options, I've hand-selected this list of 10 ways one can celebrate the contributions of African Americans to these United States. It's carefully designed with a non-black person in mind. Footnote. Throughout this book, I will use the terms African-American, black, and Negro interchangeably. There is rarely a logic to it, so please try not to overthink it. At the end of the list, I provide a tool for you to assess your celebratory skills, so pay close attention. Number 1. Change the wallpaper on your computer or mobile phone to an image of a slave plantation. We'll start with something simple. When your friends or coworkers ask you why you have a picture on your screen of slaves working the fields, you should smugly reply, "I believe in honoring the people who made America possible, don't you?" Then, gently touch your screen in a longing fashion and shake your head slowly. Just be sure to avoid saying anything like, "I know slavery was a horrible institution, but..." This sentence is impossible to complete in any reasonable way, regardless of whether or not it is Black History Month, and is especially troublesome on the presidential campaign trail. I'm looking at you, Michelle Bachmann. Number 2. Watch BET. Never mind that it's not owned by a black person anymore. You can still learn a lot from BET. Primarily, you will learn that black people love reruns. And if you're lucky, you'll catch the Tyler Perry movie. I know the Internet Movie Database says Perry has written over 10 films, and there may be several titles and even different casts. But if you've seen one Tyler Perry movie, you've experienced the entire canon. The man has only made one film, and you can catch it on BET repeatedly. Number 3. Avoid being explicitly racist. This one can be a struggle for many. Racism is everywhere, and it comes naturally. But it's considered to be extra offensive if you are explicitly racist toward black people during Black History Month. If nothing else, it shows a lack of discipline. If you're serious about hating black people, prove it by delaying that hate for a few weeks. Racism is exhausting and you could use a break. Take one. On March 1st, you'll return to peak form, fired up and ready to marginalize.
That was How to Be Black by Baratunde Thurston.
Social media. It's got everyone buzzing these days. But what is it really, and how can you put it to work for you? More than just a passing trend that's hot today, gone tomorrow, social media is marketing that is making a difference for savvy business people who have jumped into the future. Magic Buzz is a new online marketing company so unique, we've even coined a special phrase for what we do. Socio-viral. We combine the word-of-mouth friendliness of social media like Facebook and Twitter together with the viral reach power of YouTube to create the socio-viral effect. Magic Buzz's socio-viral solution provides the measurable value of online advertising that works, affordable, and effective. So get the buzz going for your business. Magic Buzz, with only one Z, because we're never asleep. Visit us at magicbuz.com. For more information or any questions, please feel free to email us at info@magicbuzz.com. Magic Buzz, we're there when you can't be.
Readers, I was extremely fortunate to meet Dave Barry, my guest today, when we were both at the Miami Herald. Of course, you know, Dave is a wildly popular syndicated humor columnist who, among many other kudos, has won a Pulitzer Prize for commentary. He's written movies, more than 30 books, including History of the Millennium So Far, which you'll find previewed on archived shows, bookreportradio.com, week of January 22nd, 2011. His newest title is Lunatics, which he wrote with Alan Swibel. Swibel is an original writer for Saturday Night Live and has won Emmy Awards for his work on The Gary Shandling Show, Monk, and Curb Your Enthusiasm. He won the Thurber Prize for his novel The Other Shulman, and he collaborated with Billy Crystal on his Tony Award-winning play 700 Sundays. Welcome, Dave. Thanks for stopping by the Book Report.
Thanks for having me.
How did you and Alan decide to write a book together?
Well, we met at the Mark Twain Awards in I think, 2005, when Steve Martin was the award winner, and I was one of the presenters, and Larry David was one. And Alan Zweibel was a writer for helped Larry David with his speech, and we met there, kind of hit it off, and then I ran into him over time at a number of book events, Miami Book Fair and others. And he started saying, we should do something together. That's kind of, he's a very enthusiastic person. But I said, sure, let's do something, but I didn't really think we'd ever do anything together. And then he came up with this idea for a book where this is all the concept he had was that there would be two dads at a soccer game for little girls, 10-year-old, 11-year-old girls. And one of the dads is a referee, and he calls a penalty, an offsides penalty on one of the other girls just as she scores what would have been an important goal. And that gets the dad of that girl very upset. So you have these two dads, and he said, I'll write the one dad, and you can write the other dad, and we'll just see where it goes. That was the whole premise. And so he wrote a chapter where the guy who's a nice man, calls this offsides penalty, and turned it over to me, and I came up with another guy, and his guy was really nice, kind of like him, kind of like Alan, this kind of goofy man, sweet. So I just created this complete horrible jerk, this racist, homophobic idiot, moron, disgusting human being. And that became my character. And so we wrote chapters back and forth in character, kind of like improvisational comedy, basically trying to make each other laugh. And the plot, if that's loosely call it the plot, went from there.
Ah, so you were the evil Jeffrey Peckerman.
I am the evil Jeffrey Peckerman.
And so you wrote all of the horrible Jeffrey.
I wrote all the horrible Jeffrey, and I wrote the news accounts at some point later on. The plot gets quite convoluted in this book. And to explain, the guys, the characters themselves, Philip Horkman, who's Alan's character, and Jeffrey Peckerman is mine, get involved in all kinds of major world events, but they never really know that that's happening. So we create, so we could let the readers know what was going on. We had Brian Williams weigh in periodically from NBC.
You know, I wanted to ask you about that, because besides Brian Williams, you had Donald Trump and Charo, and you showered a bit of attention on Sarah Palin, too.
Shower attention is a very classy way of putting it. Like,
thank you, sir. So did you actually have to contact these famous people before you wrote about them?
Yes, absolutely. We talked to Donald Trump. We talked to Charo. We talked to Sarah Palin. No, we didn't talk to anybody. Just wrote them in the book, and we hope that they don't sue us, or in the case of Donald Trump, hire large men to come beat us up.
Well, the book settings included Cuba, Tiananmen Square, Mogadishu, and Yemen, but am I correct in deducing that the book is actually a scathing commentary on U.S. elections?
Well, we end up, we needed an ending, and we were thinking, we hadn't done a whole lot of plotting up to that point. I mean, it's wild what happens to these guys within several days of meeting each other. These two guys who don't like each other and don't ever want to see each other again have, through a series of coincidences, accidentally, completely inadvertently, managed to hijack a clothing optional cruise ship. And that's only sort of the beginning of where it gets weird. So as we go through all those things, all those venues you talked about, we thought, well, when the book comes out, the presidential election will be underway here, the campaign. So we'll work that in, and we had our two guys play a significant role in the presidential elections. Again, not intentional, really, just significant.
Yes, and specifically the Republican nominee. So, in actuality, Dave, who do you wish the Republican nominee to be?
Oh, they're all kind of. I miss Herman Cain. Can I just say that? Miss Herman Cain a lot, and I never thought I would. I didn't even know who he was 6 months ago, and now I miss him desperately. He was a fun guy, and I miss him.
So, can we expect a movie version of this book?
It actually has been optioned by Universal to be a movie. Now, whether it actually becomes a movie or not is anyone's guess, but it has been optioned. We've been working on the outline for the screenplay, and Steve Carell, is attached to play the Philip Hortman character. Alan's wife, Belle, is very plugged in L.A. and Hollywood. And he showed it, he shows everything to everybody. But at some point, somebody from Steve Carell's production company saw it and liked it and showed it to Steve Carell, and he liked it. And so we ended up with a deal with Universal.
How was it for you to narrate the audiobook?
It was a little bit weird for me because this character that I created uses very bad language. And if I'm going to read his character, I have to read. But once I got into it, I kind of enjoyed it because he's such a, he's got a unique voice, this guy. and I kind of got into just being this horrible human being.
And I have to know, do you really think that America has to worry about a connection between international terrorism and Chuck E. Cheese?
Yeah, if we get only one message across to the American people, it's that, you know, we need to take a much, much closer look at Chuck E. Cheese and ask ourselves what's really going on in those places.
Oh, I couldn't agree with you more, having suffered through many a birthday party there. So what are you working on now?
I'm working on another novel. This will just be my own novel, and it's a novel about a wedding set in Miami where things go very wrong. I love to write about Miami and incorporate just some of the weirdness in the air here. And as Carl Hiaasen has said, and it can be true, you can't really make Miami in a novel, in a fiction form, any stranger than it really is in real life. So it's kind of a delightful place to write about for me.
Are you working on any books for younger readers?
Yeah, Ridley Pearson and I.